Charles Martin is in the studio with me tonight. He's the author of a number of New York Times bestsellers, most recently Thunder and Rain. His latest book is now out, and it is titled Unwritten. Charles, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Let's begin with you reading a bit about the thoughts of one of the characters we know initially as Sunday. His name is Sunday initially.
Of the 6 million species on the planet, only man makes language, words. What's more, in evidence of the divine, we string these symbols together and then write them down where they take on a life of their own and breathe outside of us. Story is the bandage of the broken, sutures of the shattered, the tapestry upon which we write our lives, upon which we lay the bodies of the dying and the about to come to life. And if it's honest, true, hiding nothing, revealing all, then it is a raging river, and those who ride it finally have something to give, that they are not yet empty. Critics cry foul, claiming the tongue is a bloody butcher that blasphemes, slices, slanders, and damns, leaving scars, carnage, the broken and the beaten. Admittedly, story is a double-edged scimitar, but the fault lies not in the word, but in the hand that wields the pen. Not all stories spew, cower, and retreat. Some storm the castle, rush in, stand between, wrap their arms around, spill secrets, share their shame, return. Stories birth our dreams and feed the one thing that never dies. This is true for all of us, even those who hide behind masks, carts, and names that do not belong to us.
So this is a really important passage in a couple of ways, because in essence, words are something that Sunday's running from, but it's also the area of his greatest philanthropy.
I spent 4 days working on those two paragraphs because they matter. Folks get into my process a lot and they want to know about, I do have a word quota I try to meet every day and all that sort of stuff, but these were important. And I literally remember sitting there for 4 days wrestling with these words because they matter. They get at the heart of the story. And what they're getting at is this underlying theme of hope. One of the things I react to strongly in our culture is this idea that when we wake up, we're fed this dish of hopelessness. This is what you get today. No matter what you turn on or look at, it's like, here's your dish, eat this and just enjoy it. And I react strongly to that. I think, that's nuts. Why should we just have to chew on that? Why don't we raise hope to the surface? Why not lift that up and give that to people? So there is a strong theme of hope here that, and I've said this before, that in the center of this story, there are two things. One is an idea about hope, and two is that cracked and broken cups can still pour water. That matters to me.
Well, and certainly one of the characters that embodies hope and is certainly a wise person is Father Steady Capri.
Yeah.
So tell us about Father Steady.
He's a fun creation for me. I really love Steady. I wish that in the story I could have brought him in more, that he could have played a larger role. Maybe I'll spin him off and write his own story, but one of my favorite scenes is when he and Sunday, at the very beginning of the book, are riding the service elevator up to the top of this skyrise condominium to go meet Katie Quinn, this actress that they end up rescuing. When they get to the top of the elevator, she owns the whole floor. He lets himself in with his key into her entire floor. And Sunday asks him, how is it that you have a key to one of the most award-winning actresses of my generation? And I love his response. He says, sometimes I take the stretcher to the wounded. And I love his heart for her. He's in his early 80s. Katie's in her mid-30s. You know that they love each other, that he cares for her, that there's tenderness and warmth. But he carried a stretcher in World War II. That's how he cut his teeth. That's what his heart is. So I love the way he embodies that for both Katie and for Sunday. And he does it for Sunday in a very different way than he does it for Katie. With Katie, he's tender and he's a soft spot and he's warm. But with Sunday, late in the story, you'll see this. He just cold cocks him right across the face and says, how long am I going to have to put up with you? I love it. Anyway, he's one of my favorite characters. And I do, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning when I get up to go to the bathroom, I bump into him still. So.
What a nice midnight acquaintance. One of the things that Katie and Sunday have in common, Sunday's already removed himself from society, if you will. Katie's on the run.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about where she is in her life, why she's there, and when you talk about hope and hopelessness, how she's chosen early on in the novel to deal with it.
On the opening couple pages of the book, we meet Katie walking into a Miami cathedral where she sits down with Steady in the confessional and holds a confession. You can tell by the language, by the way that they talk to one another, that they've done this a lot. It's tender. They're sort of poking fun back and forth at each other, but it's still a confession. And about halfway through that, she reaches in her pocket and lays an envelope on his leg. They're sitting right across from each other, no veil, no door, no nothing. Says, I was wondering if you'd come speak at my funeral. And he realizes in listening to her that the thing he's been trying to get at in her for a decade and a half has finally cracked through her polished veneer, risen to the surface, and she can't suppress it anymore. And she's hatched a plan to end things and check out because it's too painful to live with. So she leaves, and Steady and Sunday come to her rescue. And I just told you they ride the service elevator. When they come up into her apartment and the door swings open, it's quiet and it's dark. And that means she has sent everyone home. Ordinarily, she likes busyness. She likes noise. She likes to be tended to. And when the door opens and no one is there, Steady now knows that she's serious this time. And when they step in her door, they can see across the expanse, and there on the balcony beyond the end of the room is a woman standing against the blackness of the Everglades, and she's standing on the railing with a rope around her neck. And as they step in, she takes a Peter Pan off the seventh floor. That's the first 15 pages of my book. And as they rush in and grab the rope and pull her back up, and she's screaming and fighting them, they pull the rope off, and Katie takes a really deep breath. The question then becomes, what do we do with Katie? And over the next days and week or two, Katie begins to trust Sunday. And she shares with him this secret that's she's buried for a long time. And it's the thing that hurts her. She's never shared with anyone. And she entrusts him with it. And you would think he would value it and that it would matter to him. The problem is that he has his own secret, which he's guarding far more deeply than her own, which is the purpose of the story.
I know you live in Florida. Mm-hmm. Do you spend time in the Everglades?
Not as much as I'd like. When I first saw this story taking place in my mind, one of the first scenes I saw was the Miami Cathedral. I can't tell you why I thought it, or knew it was Miami. I just kind of did. And I saw this woman walking in and out and this guy following her in. And the guy looked like he'd been fishing in the Everglades. And I can't explain that other than he had this look like he was disheveled, little bit of mystery to him, sun tan on his face and from the sunglasses. And I also knew that he'd been hiding. And if there's one place in Florida that you could check out and hide and nobody would ever find you, it'd be the Everglades if you knew what you were doing. So I purposefully used it from that standpoint because Sunday's hiding. And also because I love to fish. And I wanted to go down there and do some quote-unquote research. And which Christy laughs at all the time. But anyway, I took some friends to the Everglades, and we fished in the 10,000 Islands. We fished in the Keys. I did catch a tarpon, which if you look on my website, you can see the picture prominently displayed. But it was a great place for me and a sort of a technique or device as a writer to hide someone. But it also allowed me access to a lot of Florida that my character needed. I have I-75 and I-4 coming up to Jacksonville, which I needed because part of the story takes place there. You've got Alligator Alley over to Miami. And then, of course, we jump to New York City and to France.
And you mentioned Christy, who is your wife. And I'm expecting that maybe she liked the research done in France. Did she get to go along?
A year and a half ago, I was sitting working on this story in a lake up in North Florida. I said to my friend that owned the house, Steve, I said, I'm dealing with an actress with means. She would have homes all over the world in order to get away, to have some anonymity. I need to go research or at least visit some place that she would have access to. I told him, I said, I either need like a Swiss chalet or something way up there, or I need like something in France, something. And he said, you mean like a chateau? And I said, well, yeah. He said, let me make a phone call. Turns out he calls a friend of his in Atlanta who owns a very old chateau who happened to be a fan of mine and had read my stories. So he invited us over to his chateau in the Valley of the Kings in the Loire Valley, southwest of Paris. And we did that for Christie's 40th birthday. And we spent 10 days in his home. It's over 1,000 years old. There were one time 64 rooms. He's now converted it to 13 suites. He has his own vineyards. The staff opened the house for us. He has his own private chef. We woke up to freshly brewed coffee and handmade croissants. I mean, it was just, Christy, we would pinch ourselves like, are you kidding me? This is what we get to do. Now she thinks my next book needs to be set in Hawaii, but.
What a great fringe benefit. It's delightful to talk with you tonight. Thanks so much for visiting with
us. Thanks for letting me tell you my story and for reading my story.
Absolutely. I've been talking with Charles Martin about his latest book. It is titled Unwritten. You'll find more information about it at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.